Now, those of you who've been in Read, Mark, Learn groups, or those of you who are in fellowship groups at the moment, won't be surprised to learn that Matthew, like the other gospel writers, carefully constructs his material. The Gospels are not a ramshackle of jumbled incidents in Jesus' life, just sort of thrown together like my cooking. No, instead, they're carefully thought through, carefully structured material. And there's therefore structure and logic in the way Matthew writes. Chapters 1 to 4 of Matthew's Gospel give his introduction, with a lot of information about the birth of Jesus and how that happened. But from then on, Matthew constructs his gospel around five blocks of teaching of Jesus. Matthew brings together all the teaching material of Jesus and puts it into five sections. The first section of which has just ended, the Sermon on the Mount. And we then move on in this action material until the next teaching block in Matthew's gospel, which comes at chapter 10. However, even in this action bit between the teaching blocks, Matthew carefully puts his material together. Look at chapter 7 and verse 28, if you will. And when Jesus finished these sayings, the crowds were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one who had authority and not as their scribes. The crowds have just heard the sermon. They're amazed at Jesus' authority. He's taught them unlike any other teacher they've heard before. And Matthew then, in this next action section, develops the authority, the theme of the authority of Jesus, right through the next two chapters. So look at chapter 8, verse 9, if you will. The centurion describes himself as a man under authority. Turn over the page and look at chapter 9 and verse 6. Jesus declares to them that he's done this in order that they may know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins. And then verse 8, unique to Matthew this, the crowd glorified God who had given such authority to men. And then the next page, chapter 10 and verse 1, as Jesus sends out his disciples, he gives them his authority. The crowd are impressed at Jesus' authority in his teaching, and Matthew now goes on to show what that authority is like, so that they'll understand that authority. But another theme runs through this section also. Hugh on the term card entitled this series, Christ and the Crowds, and that's appropriate, because Matthew shows us the authority of Christ, but he also shows us the response of the crowds to show us how people should respond to the authority of Jesus. This last week I was having my hair cut in, you might not know, but a haircut in a barber's, and just outside the hairdresser's, a car had parked on a double yellow line. Well, the traffic warden, as they do, came along and just started to write out the ticket. And as she was writing out the ticket, the owner of the car came sprinting along the road and tried to stop her giving him the ticket. Well, some sort of discussion ensued, which I wasn't privy to, but I got the gist that the ticket was still standing, and the warden passed it over to the man, who was outraged and furious. And he took the ticket in its plastic little envelope and tore it up in front of the warden, let it drop to the ground, got in his Daimler, and drove away. Now, I suspect he hasn't heard the last of it. Well, how do we respond to authority? How do we respond to authority? Well, the key word that runs through chapters 8 and 9 of Matthew's Gospel is follow. Let me show you. Chapter 8, verse 1. When he came down the mountain, great crowds followed him. Chapter 8, verse 19. A scribe says to Jesus, Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. Or chapter 8, verse 22, but Jesus said to him, this is to another man, follow me and leave the dead to bury their own dead. Or verse 23, and when he got into the boat, his disciples followed him. Or turn over the page in chapter 9, verse 9, Jesus says to Matthew himself, follow me. And immediately Matthew follows him. Or chapter 9 and verse 27, we hear of two blind people who followed Jesus. If you look up the word follow in a concordance, you'll discover this is the greatest concentration of following in the whole of the New Testament, here in Matthew chapters 8 and 9. And so for the next few weeks, we're going to discover these twin themes, the authority of Jesus and our discipleship, our following. Well, let's look at the first section we had read to us, verses 1 to 17 of chapter 8. It's three healing miracles. I assume that they're deliberately chosen by Matthew, because we know from verse 16 that day Jesus did many healings. Three healings here recorded for us. We get a Jewish leper, a Roman centurion, and a disciple's relative. Three healings that we're going to look at for a few moments together. And there are three things I want us to note from them. The first is this. Note the authority Jesus displayed. The authority Jesus displayed. What's Jesus' authority like? Authority is one of those words that we use in different ways today, and the man with the parking ticket showed we have different responses to as well. Authority is not something that's liked a lot in our contemporary society. But what do we mean by it? Authority. I might say that Bill Bloggs is the world authority on one-legged duckbill platypuses. That means that when Bill Bloggs speaks on that subject, I ought to listen to him. He'll know what he's talking about. Or I might say, John Major has the authority to sack the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and others say, I wish he would. No, he has authority to do that. Authority that's given to him because of his office, because of the position which he carries. But what is Jesus' authority like? Well, look at the first of the three healing miracles. We see something of the extraordinary nature of it. Look, verse 2. A leper comes to Jesus and says, if you will, or as modern translations put it, if you want to, you can make me clean. And touching him, Jesus says, I will. I do want to. Be clean. Now, because we don't have lepers around in our culture today, we miss something of the extraordinary nature of what Jesus has just done. A leper, Matthew tells us, was unclean in the first century. The law of Moses before that had declared the leper to be unclean. Because of the nature of the disease, to protect others, Moses and in the law protected society from lepers. And so they weren't just considered ill, they were considered religiously unclean. And if somebody touched a leper, then that person became unclean too. Jesus and the leper would have known that well. Everyone would have known that. The principles were well stated. They'd been used as sermon illustrations in the Old Testament. Haggai had used them as a sermon illustration. So Haggai had said to the crowd, if a clean person comes and touches an unclean person, can the unclean person become clean? No. But does the clean person, by touching the unclean person, become unclean? Yes. That's the principle. So do you see how extraordinary the nature of Jesus' authority is? Because he touches this unclean person, and what happens? Immediately, his leprosy is clean. And Jesus, instead of being unclean because he touches the unclean person, remains clean. And Jesus then sends him off to the priest as the law commanded, to be certified clean so that he could rejoin the community. Jesus has the authority to make unclean things clean. It's a complete reversal of the way things naturally are. I don't know whether you ever played tricks on people by putting salt into the sugar bowl. If you do it, you'll discover that the sugar becomes salty. But if you try it the other way round and put some sugar into the salt cellar doesn't become sweet. And that's how it was with lepers. All lepers could do was to make things unclean. But Jesus has the authority to reverse that, to turn it round. And so it's not surprising that many commentators here see a visual aid for Jesus' whole ministry. Someone with authority to deal with our uncleanness. We who are unclean through sin, able to be made clean by Jesus. Now whether that's Matthew's point or not, he clearly wants us to see the radical nature of Jesus' authority. Whilst fulfilling the law and keeping it, note verse 4, he's able to reverse its worst judgment on this leper. The unclean becomes clean. But the second healing miracle couldn't be more of a contrast to the first, because the request to Jesus this time is made by a centurion, a Roman soldier. He comes to Jesus, verse 6, and says, "My servant is lying at home paralyzed in terrible distress." Jesus says he'll come and heal him. But then in verse 8, this amazing statement, "Lord, I am not worthy to have you under my roof, but say the word and my servant will be healed." And then comes his understanding of Jesus' authority in verse 9. He himself is a man under authority and has authority. He has authority over his servants as a direct result of being given authority from somewhere else. And so he's able to say to his soldier, "Go," and the soldier will go, "Come," and "Come." A Roman centurion has authority over his soldiers because it was given to him by his commanding officer, who in turn was given his authority by his commanding officer, and so on up to Caesar himself. So in Roman army life, when a centurion gave an order, it was the same as Caesar giving an order. And it was if you disobeyed a Roman centurion, then the punishment was as heavy as if you disobeyed the Caesar himself. This centurion recognizes that Jesus' authority is similar to his. He knows that Jesus receives his authority from somewhere. And from Jesus' commendation of him, we see that that authority must be from God. Implication: as Jesus speaks, God speaks. Jesus speaks with the authority of God himself. And as you said in our introduction to the service, that is awesome authority. It ought to make us quake, the authority that Jesus has. Matthew clearly wants us to understand this about Jesus' authority. As the centurion's authority over his soldier comes down from Caesar, Jesus' authority over disease comes from God. He has God's authority. The authority the crowd recognized at the end of the Sermon on the Mount is authority from God. And it is real authority. Because of where it comes from. Because of where it comes from, Jesus can speak to a disease and say, "Go," and it will be gone. I wonder whether you ever feel sorry for the Queen at times. Do you ever feel sorry for her at the state opening of Parliament? She reads a speech, a long speech given to her by her ministers. I'd love her sometime just to stand up and say, "I'm not reading any more of this drivel. That's not what's going to happen. Instead, we'll do something else." But she never does. Because her authority in many ways is so notional. But Jesus' authority, because it's God's authority, he's able to say to a disease, "Go." And verse 13, at that very moment, this centurion's servant was healed. What do we learn about Jesus' authority? Well, it's authority that can make the unclean clean, because it's authority from God himself. Authority to command sickness to go. Matthew's left his readers at the end of chapter 7 knowing that Jesus has authority in his teaching. But in this chapter, he continues to build the identical picture of who Jesus is just that little bit more. Because Matthew wants his readers to discover who Jesus is. That's the purpose of what's going on here. Who is Jesus? He wants his readers to be able to echo a few chapters later on with Peter that this is the Christ, this is the Son of the living God. And so his readers ought to be asking the question, authority such as this, where's it come from? Who does this mean Jesus is? And it's a question that people need to answer. Who is this Jesus? The authority we see in these two miracles should point us to his identity, to who he is. The authority Jesus displayed. That leads us second to the response to Jesus commended. And next week we'll focus a little more on what it means to respond to Jesus. But we do so here because in these 17 verses, Matthew wants us clearly to understand and learn from the responses we see here to Jesus. Certainly from both the Jewish leper and the Roman centurion, Matthew wants us to see that they both recognize the authority of Jesus. So the leper says, You can make me clean. The centurion says, just say the word. Both recognize in Jesus his authority to deal with their and their servants' uncleanness. And both then therefore place their dependence or submission to that authority. The leper says, if you want to, if you want to. Whilst the centurion, even though he's an occupying soldier in trampled Israel, declares, Lord, I'm not worthy to have you even enter my house. Just say the word. Matthew seems to draw our attention to both these men's recognition of the authority of Jesus, and we see Jesus commending the centurion for that fact. Look at verse 10. Jesus marveled at this man and said, truly, not even in Israel have I found such faith. It must have been a dreadful shock to Jesus' hearers, and certainly to Matthew's readers. Because here the Roman Gentile centurion is the one who's commended for faith, for recognizing Jesus' authority, for submitting to it. But that, Jesus goes on to explain, is the response he's looking for. The centurion becomes the model, the example of appropriate response to Jesus' authority. So much so that Jesus goes on in verses 11 and 12 to issue both an encouragement and a warning. In verse 11 he says, I tell you, many will come from the east and the west and sit at table with Abraham, Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. This centurion makes the appropriate response to Jesus' authority, and Jesus says he won't be the last. There will be many who will come, and they'll be Gentiles. That's a relief to us who are Gentiles, isn't it? Jesus uses this centurion to show that the way into the kingdom of heaven is through faith, and over the next weeks we're going to discover something more of what that faith is. You'll have to come back next week to discover it, because it's spelt out in the next section of Matthew's Gospel. But here Jesus is saying that for those who respond in the appropriate way to Jesus, it is possible to enter the kingdom. It's essential for people to recognize and submit to Jesus' authority, to see that he's the king. But in doing that, that is open for the Gentile to become part of the privileges of the Jews. Sit at table with Abraham, Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But, verse 12, the centurion's response also becomes a warning. For the sons of the kingdom will be thrown into outer darkness. Their men will weep and gnash their teeth. Jesus is saying there are going to be those in Israel who are going to fail to respond. And their destiny is hell. Verse 12 can only be seen in those terms. Their destiny is hell. Those who are called the sons of the kingdom, that's a striking phrase, the sons of the kingdom, are those who will fail to enter it. And later in Matthew's Gospel, that's described as those who are invited to a banquet. They're the ones who were invited, but who refused to accept the invitation. So right at the outset of Jesus' ministry, Matthew, a Jew, writing this, is showing that national background is not enough to enter the kingdom. That the way where you were born and the people you were born to isn't going to make you in. This centurion shows that the way to enter is through recognizing and submitting to Jesus' authority. Submitting to who he is. And, says Jesus, it is a big deal. Notice that it is a very big deal, this responding to Jesus' authority. That's why we need to come back next week and understand what it means to respond, what it means to follow. Because notice, it is a very big deal. Eternity is at stake. Notice the choice here is heaven or hell. We can either be in the banquet of the kingdom, or we can be eternally distressed in this place where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. That must make it important for us, doesn't it? Important for us that we understand who Jesus is, we take note of his authority, and that we respond to it in the appropriate way. I take it that means we'll be praying for John Chapman as he does a guest service at Sunday at 7 next Sunday night. And 2 weeks today here in our Sunday morning. We'll be concerned that our friends discover who Jesus is, that they discover what his authority is like, and that they learn the appropriate response to him. We'll be keen for that, because it's a big deal. Jesus is saying that's a very big issue that's going on here. It's heaven or hell. The man I saw the other day tear up his parking ticket, he rejected the authority of the traffic warden. It doesn't mean the traffic warden's authority was any less just because he rejected it. Jesus says there'll be those who reject his authority, who don't respond in faith. Well, it's an encouragement that people can come in from the east and from the west. But it's a big warning, isn't it? The authority of Jesus displayed, the response to Jesus commended, and then we'll finally and briefly look at the prophecy about Jesus fulfilled. Because that's the conclusion of the third healing incident. Jesus goes in verse 14, if you looked. In verse 14, he goes to Peter's home and heals his mother-in-law. Now, at this point, preachers attempted to make jokes about mother-in-laws, like the text doesn't tell us that Peter wanted her healed and all sorts of things like that. But Hugh's trying to teach me to be kind to mother-in-laws at the moment, since I'm about to gain one fairly soon, so I'm not going to make any jokes about mother-in-laws at all. No, the point of this incident seems to be Matthew's editorial comment in verse 17. And it's typical of Matthew to add an editorial comment. His readers will be getting used to that through the gospel by now. Verse 17, this was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah. He took our infirmities and bore our diseases. Matthew wants us to understand that Jesus is the Messiah. Now he shows that through what Jesus does, the authority he has. But he also does it by showing us that Jesus is the fulfillment of the Old Testament. He took our infirmities and bore our diseases. That's a verse taken from our Old Testament reading, one of the servant songs of Isaiah about the Messiah. Now, the Matthew's use of this, Isaiah 53, verse 4, here in verse 17, has puzzled the commentators. Because all the other New Testament writers see Isaiah chapter 53 as being fulfilled at the cross, as being fulfilled at Jesus' death. The other New Testament writers use Isaiah 53 to show us Jesus in his death is our substitute. And so the commentators puzzle, in what way here does Jesus take our infirmities and bear our diseases? Now, he certainly didn't swap places with the leper. He certainly didn't swap places with the paralyzed servant or the fevered mother-in-law. And so many of the commentators, some of them, say that what Jesus is doing here is anticipating his work on the cross. For there he did bear our infirmities and diseases. In dealing with our sin at the cross, Jesus certainly has dealt with all sickness. It is all defeated. Though you and I aren't going to gain the benefit of that until heaven itself because of our bodies. Now, the commentators may be right, but they may be complicating it more than it need to be. Because I think the question to ask is, how would Matthew's readers have understood this explanatory comment? Well, I'm sure at first they'll have taken it literally, that Jesus did here deal with sickness and disease, that Jesus here was bearing these people's sickness. It means he dealt with their sickness. Matthew's not implying through these three healing miracles that there's any promise from Jesus to banish the world of all medics and nurses now. But rather he's saying that in Jesus' ministry, Jesus dealt with sickness. He healed it. And Isaiah said that would happen. But I also think Matthew's readers would have seen something more. As they read this prophecy fulfilled, they would have turned to the Old Testament because they would recognize the passage it came from. They would recognize it came from Isaiah chapter 53. They would know probably the passage by heart. They wouldn't need to turn to it as we're going to need to do now. It's on page 648 of the front part. Page 648, Isaiah 53. Notice what Matthew said to us already. Here is the Messiah. Here's the one with authority to take away disease. Here's a man with authority. Matthew shows them the kind of Messiah he is through this quote from Isaiah 53. Authority? Yes. But, notice Isaiah 53 verse 3. He was despised, rejected by men, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. or verse 6. The Lord laid upon him the iniquity of us all. Or verse 7. He was oppressed, he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth, like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, and like a sheep that's before its shearers. What sort of Messiah? What sort of Messiah is Jesus? Well, Matthew's readers could hardly fail to see it, could they? A man with authority from God, like no other they'd seen. A man who could do what no other could do. A man who could reverse the nature and make something that's unclean clean again. A man who had such authority he could command sickness with a word at a distance. What sort of Messiah is he? Certainly one with awesome authority, but one whose destiny is death. One whose destiny is rejection. One whose destiny is to be despised by men. We're going to remember that later on with bread and wine this morning, that the one with authority becomes the man of sorrows. And we mustn't separate the authority of Jesus from his death. One of my favourite lines in one of the modern hymns is from Graham Kendrick. Do you know the line where he describes Jesus as the one whose hands flung stars into space, yet to cruel nails surrendered? Jesus, the one with awesome authority, Matthew, right at the beginning of his gospel, is signalling to his readers is going to be the one who's going to end up on a cross, who's going to end up dead. Jesus heading to the cross. And we separate Jesus' authority from his death on the cross at our peril. It seems to be common in much contemporary Christianity at the moment to make that separation. People like to see what Jesus is the one with authority, but less comfortable to see him as the one at the cross. Jesus, the one with awesome authority, yet to cruel nails surrendered. How do we respond to that? Well, come back next week, because Matthew shows us two men who come to Jesus in terms of response. And we'll look at them next week, and it'd be a help if you've read them. But in these 17 verses, the authority of Jesus displayed. The response to Jesus commended, but the prophecy about Jesus fulfilled. Let's pause and be quiet for a moment or two. Let's allow God's word to sink into our hearts and to our minds. And then in just a moment or two, Hugh Palmer is going to come and lead us in prayer. But let's pause and be quiet.